Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Canton, Ohio, and earned a degree in political science from the University of Notre Dame, while also becoming an All-American football player. He played 15 seasons in the NFL and considered one of the greatest defensive linemen to ever play the game. He was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1988. He then became a judge, and from 1993 through 2015, he served as Associate Justice on the Minnesota Supreme Court. His name? Justice Ellen Page. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're speaking to a most extraordinary person, Justice Ellen Page. Justice, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, thank you. It's good to be on.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Sure. As you mentioned, I grew up in Canton, Ohio. I am the fourth of four children, and my parents believed strongly in the importance of education, made sure that I understood that if I was going to have a better life than they had, I had to be educated, had to be prepared. They also understood that education is a tool that can be used to help overcome discrimination. You know, when I was growing up, our nation was divided by race in some cases. In the South, segregation was there as a matter of course, and my parents saw education as a tool to help overcome that. I was fortunate to have parents and family that loved me and nurtured me and made sure that I stayed on the straight and narrow.
Your dream as a little kid, Justice Page, was to become a lawyer. Why so?
Well, it really boils down to a couple of things. One, you know, Canton is a steel town at the time, and I had an uncle who spent 40 years working in a steel mill. And even at a young age, I understood that that wasn't really for me. It was dirty, dangerous, and repetitious work. Good work, but work that didn't sort of fit my personality. I probably also watched a little too much Perry Mason. And finally, and maybe most important, I was 8 years old in 1954 when the United States Supreme Court decided Brown versus the Board of Education. And I can still remember reading newspaper articles in the Canton Repository and the Cleveland Plain Dealer about the court's decision in Brown. And from that decision, I was left with the impression and a sense of the real power of the law. And over time, I developed a sense that the law was really about a couple of things, solving problems and helping people, and most important, justice. And that's something that has always been of interest to me.
While you were in high school, in the couple summers, you worked a construction team that was building a building in Canton, Ohio, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What do you remember about those summers?
Well, it was one of the summers when I was back, actually it was beyond high school, when I was back in town after my first year at Notre Dame. And the construction company, either after or before my first year at Notre Dame, but at any rate, the construction company that I worked for had a couple of projects, one of which was building a new plant in North Canton, Ohio, for the Huber Vacuum Company. And they had some work on the Hall of Fame site. And I didn't spend a lot of time there or a long time there, But I did, you know, once or twice have assignments that took me there. And my my skill at that time was pushing a broom.
How was it you chose to go to Notre Dame?
Well, I had a choice of a number of schools: Ohio State, Michigan State, Purdue, Michigan, Minnesota, Toledo. And I just came to the conclusion that academically for me, not only academically, but once I was done with my education, that Notre Dame's reputation and its alumni association might have, you know, greater ongoing benefits. You know, in retrospect, I suspect that any one of those schools would have been a great place to graduate from. But as it turned out, things worked out pretty well for me at Notre Dame.
God has blessed you, Ellen Page, with some, bringing you some phenomenal people in your life. One was the famous Reverend Theodore Hesburgh, the president of Notre Dame. Tell us about Father Ted, please.
Well, he was one of those larger-than-life people that had a reputation, but not only a reputation. He was somebody whose work around the world was life-altering, and life-altering for, really, when I think about it, all of us. He was one of those living giants, and to have had the good fortune to have been able to spend time in his presence, to get to know him, I was pretty fortunate.
We're talking to Justice Ellen Page. When we come back, we're going to ask him about another phenomenal man that mentored him at Notre Dame. And I'm Jack Grisul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Grisul, and we're with Justice Ellen Page, who was an All-American defensive lineman in 1966 and led the Fighting Irish to the 1966 National Championship. And your coach was Era Parsegian. Tell us about Coach Parsegian, please.
Well, thanks for giving me credit for leading the team to the National Championship. I was just one of a number of players that were fortunate enough to be there. And to be there under Era, I was a sophomore when he, I was in my second year, when he came to campus from Northwestern. And, you know, I used the term life-altering earlier. His... I can remember the first time he showed up on campus, and he had a team meeting. And, you know, at that time, I'm a 19-year-old kid playing football, having fun, and not thinking much about the game itself. And he said something in that first meeting that really stuck with me. He said, you know, the game of football is really pretty simple. It's about two things. And I'm thinking, two things? It seems like a lot more complicated than that. But he said, it's really about field position and possession. And if you do the things that allow you to maintain field position and possession, you will be successful. And in the end, I mean, it was like a light bulb went off for me, because it makes perfect sense. If you can do those two things well, do the things that allow you to do those two things well, good things will happen. They can't guarantee you that you'll be successful, but chances are pretty high that when you do those kind of basic fundamental things, good things will happen. He was tough. He was good-natured. And I had the good fortune to visit with him 2 years ago at his home in South Bend. And that was a unique and special pleasure.
Let's go back to November 19th, 1966, the game of the century. You go to East Lansing. Notre Dame is 8-0. The Spartans are 9-0. Tell us about the game of the century.
Well, you know, there were a lot. I mean, almost an unbelievable number of incredibly talented football players on the field that day on both teams. And if you wanted to, if you ever wanted to see and be a part of and be in a hard-fought football game, I think I was, when that one was over, I felt like I'd been in a traffic accident, far more beat up and tired than any other game I played either before or since. And it was really one of those epic struggles. As it turns out, we ended up in a 10-10 tie. And there was, I suppose, some controversy with that because Notre Dame ended up with the football at the end of the game and ran the football. But, you know, that was perfectly consistent with Era's view of the world, that if you do the things that allow you to be successful, good things will happen. And his approach, I thought, was the exactly right thing to do.
You mentioned in that previous answer that there were a number of incredibly talented football players on that field that day. You were one of the most talented, and in 1967, you're drafted in the first round, the 15th pick overall, by the Minnesota Vikings, and now your coach becomes Bud Grant, who's now 91. Tell us about Coach Grant, please.
Well, I was the 15th person drafted. I was the third first-round draft choice of the Minnesota Vikings.
Wow.
So the first two draft choices for the Vikings were Gene Washington and Clinton Jones, both obviously stars on the Michigan State team.
Hmm.
That's how talented they were. And Bud was, and still is, great person, somebody who was very stoic, somebody who understood that doing the fundamentals and the small things right that will allow for success. And I have the occasion to see him every now and then, and he seems to be doing pretty well.
You played 15 seasons in the NFL, both for the Vikings and then the Bears. You played in four Super Bowls, Super Bowl 4, 8, 9, and 11.
Yes.
You were named in 1971 the NFL's most valuable player, one of, I believe, only three defensive players ever to be named the league's MVP. And
yes.
From 79 to 81, you played with a man named Sweetness, Walter Payton. What'd you learn from Walter Payton?
Well, I tell you what, I learned from playing with him that it was a lot easier playing with him than against him. He was one of the great, 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 all-time great running backs ever to play the game, and just an all-around good person. Fantastic sense of humor. Kind of a prankster, if you will, at times. But I was fortunate enough to be able to spend some time with him over the years. We used to go out after the practice and training camp, and we'd go over to Lake Michigan, and you know, it's 95 degrees out and you're hot, and so hot you can hardly stand it. And Lake Michigan is probably 65 to 70 degrees, and the temperature difference is startling. And we would both go over and kind of jump in and jump right back out.
Let's jump ahead to July 30th, 1988, and you get inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in your hometown, Canton, Ohio, and your presenter is a lady, Willerene Beasley.
Beasley, an educator.
Yes, from North Community High School, Minneapolis principal. Why did you choose her?
Well, it seemed to me that the Hall of Fame obviously is about football, but it seemed to me that it could also, in addition to being about football, be something more, you know, football plus. And it gave me a chance to focus a little bit, obviously, on the football, but also on education, which is something that, as I noted earlier, my parents instilled in me. And given the sometimes conflict we see between athletics and academics, this seemed to me to be something that was a good way to make strong points about both.
We're talking to Chief Justice Alan Page, who was the first Canton native to ever be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Justice Alan Page, who was inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame 1988. July 30th was the actual day, Justice. So
yes.
You go back home to Canton, Ohio, for this induction. When you put your head on the pillow that night, Alan Page, what did you think about?
I was exhausted. It had been a full day and a full week leading up to it. You know, it's always great to be recognized and honored, but it's also important to remember that the success that one has is not that person's alone. That there were a whole host of people that helped me along the way, contributed to the football player that I was, the person that I was, the person that I am. And I think I reflected on that as much as anything. Those who had made it possible. We talk about, you know, the notion of pulling oneself up by their bootstraps, but it's the hand up that somebody else gives you that really makes things possible.
I quote you now as part of your induction speech that day. On this occasion, I asked myself, what contribution can I still make that would be truly worthy of the outpouring of warmth and good feelings as I have received today? And the answer for me is clear. To help give other children the chance to achieve their dreams. And, sir, you and your wife, Diane, then start the Page Education Foundation. 30 years ago, tell us about the Page Education Foundation, please.
Well, as you note, we started it 30 years ago with the goal of encouraging, motivating, and assisting young men and women of color pursue their education beyond high school. We do that two ways. One, by providing financial assistance in the form of grants. But two, and more importantly, we require our grant recipients, we call them Page Scholars, we require our Page Scholars to mentor young children, kindergarten through eighth grade, specifically in the area of education as tutors, mentors, and role models, sending the strong, clear message to those young children that education is a tool that they can use to achieve whatever their hopes and dreams may be. And those young children get to see somebody who looks like them, comes from their neighborhood, has some shared experience using education as just such a tool. For far too long, we have paid lip service to the notion of the importance of education. And sometimes we have overemphasized athletic participation to the exclusion of academic involvement. And Diane and I just decided that this was an opportunity for us to really to change the future. Change the future for the scholars who we help support. Change the future for the young children they tutor and mentor. And change the future for the communities that our scholars live and work in. And we're pretty proud of them. The foundation's motto is creating heroes through education and service. And over the years, we've had roughly 6,700 plus paid scholars doing just exactly that, changing the future and being heroes, certainly being my heroes, and creating hope and changing the future.
If you want to learn more, www.page-ed.org. Justice Page is not one to boast, so let me give you some facts and figures. In the last 30 years, Page Education Foundation, 6,700 plus Page grants, totaling $14 million. Just in the last year, 508 Page scholars who volunteered 13,500 volunteer hours, and they served 5,420 children. Phenomenal, phenomenal efforts. Justice Page, what do our young people today truly want and need?
You know, they want the same things that I wanted when I was a child. They want to have a good life. They want to be safe. They want to be secure. They want to be loved. They want to enjoy the benefits that our society has to offer. And it's, you know, the responsibility for putting them in position to be able to do those things and to have those things. Certainly they have to be engaged in the process, but those of us who are adults have a responsibility to ensure that they have the opportunity. And you'd be surprised, give people the opportunity and they will surprise you how well they will take up the opportunities that are available. But if you're not prepared for the opportunities when they come along, then, you know, they aren't really opportunities. And so it's incumbent upon us to make sure that they're prepared.
Ellen Page, what have these young Page scholars taught you for these last 30 years?
That what they've done for me is given me hope for the future. They've taught me that when people put their hearts and their minds and their bodies to the task, the future can be better than what it might otherwise have been.
When a 40 or 45-year-old young man or woman comes up to you and says, Justice Page, my name is so-and-so, and 25 years ago, you changed my life through this Page Education Foundation, and then they tell you they're a banker or whatever, what do you think?
It makes your heart swell because that's what we hoped for when we started, not for them to, you know, come up and pat us on the back, but to see their success and see the contributions that they are making to the communities where they live, to the states where they live, and to our country. I mean, that's really what it's all about. You know, we've had the good fortune to be able in a position to help along the way. But when you see and hear our scholars' stories, you couldn't be more proud of what they've accomplished. And you couldn't be more proud of having had the opportunity to be a small part of it.
We're talking to Chief Justice Ellen Page, who was and still is a J.J. Watt before there ever was a J.J. Watt. Or maybe more accurately, J.J. Watt is a modern-day Ellen Page. While you were playing for the Vikings, you were also a full-time law student, and you earned a J.D. from the University of Minnesota Law School in 1978. How did you do both?
Well, you know, people are capable of doing more than one thing at a time. And yes, I was playing football and going to law school, but I also had a wife and four children. And it was important to me to be a part of our family. So ultimately, it was a question of time management and making sure that I used the time available efficiently to prepare for my classes, to do the classwork, to spend time and be a part of our family, and to continue to play football at the highest level I possibly could.
We're talking to Justice Ellen Page. If you want to learn more, www.page-ed.org. And I'm Jack Russell, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Russell. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to a most extraordinary person, Justice Ellen Page, who's also written three children's books. Justice, from 1987 to 1993, you were an assistant attorney general for Minnesota. And in 1992, you decide you're going to run to become a judge. Why so?
You know, as a lawyer, once I figured out what my skills were, what my strengths were, and what my interests were, I concluded that what appellate court judges do, mind you, not what trial court judges do, but what appellate court judges do would fit me well. And as it turns out, I was right. I sought election to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and I will be forever grateful that the people of this great state elected me in the November 1992 election and reelected me three times thereafter, gave me the opportunity to serve on our court. And I can't tell you how humbling that is, and how honored, but beyond honored, humbled I am that they put their faith in me. You know, judges are there to exercise their judgment and not impose their will. And to have people trust you to do that is pretty special.
In 1992, when you became Associate Justice, you became the first African-American to serve on the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Yes.
Justice, I've heard it said that the profession of law is a calling. Why so?
I think it's because it's about justice. It's about fairness. Yes, it's a profession and it's a career, but in the end, it's about, at least for me, it's about ensuring fairness and that everybody is treated equally. No matter who you are, no matter what your background is, no matter what your economic status or race or religion, none of that matters. It's that, you know, we're all human beings and we all deserve to be treated humanely and fairly.
In 2004, you had the great honor of giving the commencement address at your alma mater, the University of Notre Dame.
I did.
And your major theme that day was character. Please talk about that.
Well, you know, there are times when you look around and you see greed, incivility, if not active, or a lack of civility, if not active incivility, or aggressive incivility. And if we're going to survive as a nation and as a world, we have to figure out how to live together. And one way to do that is to ensure that we are honest, that we treat others with respect, that we respect ourselves, we play fairly. And I thought it was important to, at least in some way, remind the graduates that we had to be honest and trustworthy. We had to be people of character. And quite frankly, that notion is more important today than ever. We have gotten to be at a time where, or in a place where people just seem to want to lie for no reason other than their own personal advantage. And that is damaging to us as a society and us individually. I mean, trust is a very precious commodity. And without being honest and truthful, when we lie, that erodes trust. And without trust, we have nothing.
Father Hesburgh famously said that courage is not the absence of fear, it's acting with integrity in the face of fear. And Alan Page...
No, I hadn't heard that, but he was, as usual, right on.
You have phenomenal courage, Alan Page. How can I become courageous?
You know, it's in one sense, it's courage is very difficult. In another sense, you just have to do what's right. Work to figure out what's right and what's wrong, and then do what's right. It's really pretty simple.
You and your family have tried to tackle racial justice through a family art collection. Can you talk about that, please?
Well, we started collecting art and artifacts from really from slavery up through today. Number of items from the Jim Crow era of our country. We have a slave-made brick from the original White House. We have whites-only and colored-only signs. One of the most significant things, at least to me, was that we are the caretaker for, because we're really just caretakers for all these things, is a funeral banner from Abraham Lincoln's funeral. On one side it says, Uncle Abe, we will not forget you. And on the other side it says, our country shall be one country. And that our country shall be one country, something that we haven't achieved yet, but it's something that both Diane and I have worked tirelessly to be a part of helping create.
Justice, as our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners, please?
I would advise them to work hard, be honest, be truthful, be trustworthy. Figure out the difference between right and wrong and then do what is right. Have fun along the way. Don't be afraid of failure. I've learned far more from my mistakes and my errors than I ever learned from my successes. And seek excellence along the way. Be as good as you can be so that you can achieve your fullest self. Don't play to the level of the competition.
So to summary, all you have to do, young people, is live like Ellen Page has lived for 72 years. Justice, fabulous. Thanks a million. Keep up the great work, please.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.